Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, a Pittsburgh Steelers podcast made by fans like you, for fans like you. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. I am your host, Joe Kuzma, and folks, I have got a big show planned for you today. Very excited for this myself. About to sit down with two of the heads of two of the largest Pittsburgh Steelers websites on the internet as we talk about the preseason and training camp developments, what the 2016 Pittsburgh Steelers season may look like, some additional predictions. But before I get to that, if you want to know about some of these players that we're going to be discussing on our roundtable discussion today, I encourage you to go over and download the free ebook, the 2016 preseason welcome guide by Steel City Underground, actually written by me, carefully handcrafted to detail all of the new Pittsburgh Steelers joining the team in 2016. That includes free agents such as Ladarius Green and draft picks such as our first round selection cornerback Artie Burns. Folks, this is a free download. You could get it by signing up at steelcityunderground.com/preseason, and it is yours. Of course, keep the calls rolling in, folks. Got some very good questions that are coming in. Got some redundant ones on the hotline at 203-904-SCU. When I get like a really, really good one, or we have some additional time that we could spare here in the show, I promise to feature a few of your phone calls here and answer them as well. But getting to the topic at hand, the roundtable discussion, I would like to welcome my guests at this time.
Welcoming back the editor of Behind the Steel Curtain, Jeff Hartman, and welcoming for the first time the editor of Steelers Wire, Neil Coulong. Gentlemen, how are you doing this morning?
Doing very well. How are you?
Oh, you know what? I can't complain, actually. It's great to have both of you guys on, and what we're going to do today is we have a set of questions where we're going to do a roundtable. Very appreciative of having both of you guys not only come on the show, but on the show at the same time and do this with me. What we're going to do here is I'm going to pitch you guys a question. Feel free to answer it. Try not to step over everyone's toes. This isn't exactly a presidential debate. I'll try and add my two cents in here and there. As you know, sometimes I go on some long rants. Just feel free to shut me up at any time. The first question, gentlemen. The Pittsburgh Steelers are talking about getting rid of their outside linebacker rotation. Do you think this is a good or bad idea?
I'll go first. I think that this is a really bad idea. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers last year, when you have James Harrison, who showed that he is still effective, the fact that they're talking about turning to Jarvis Jones as a primary outside linebacker, I don't care if James Harrison is 60 years old, he's better than Jarvis Jones. And Jarvis Jones has yet to prove himself as a pass rusher. I don't get the sentiment and the narrative that's always going around, whereas, well, he doesn't get a chance to rush the passer as much. You know, it's always James Harrison when he's in it. Well, there's a reason why. If Jarvis Jones was this world beater at rushing the passer, then they would have him rushing the passer more. But instead, he sets the edge and he drops back in coverage. I just don't understand why the Steelers would do this. On the left side, I get it. You want to free out there as much as possible. But on the right side, totally disagree. I think it's a bad move.
I can see the logic of why they would want to do that. I mean, this really is a make or break year for Jones. They've put the investment in him. There's a point that they're going to have to say, look, you're going to have to dive in the pool and figure out how to swim. There's no reason now at this point in Jones's career, he should be behind Harrison. And the fact that Harrison still continues to outproduce him is certainly a problem as far as the structure of the outside linebacker position goes. But Jones should have enough by now to say that he could play 80% of the snaps without much of a problem. Harrison's already hurt in camp. He tweaked an ankle the other day. What's his longevity going to be? How can you prepare to have a 38 or 39, however old Harrison is right now, how can you prepare to have him playing 50% of the snaps when you've got a young, hopefully entering his prime Jones sitting there? I think the plan really should be to have Jones enter the season as the bona fide starter, if you will. And from there, if he isn't earning it, you have Harrison waiting in the wings. But if anything, I think the statement that they're making, they don't want to rotate them, is more forcing Jones to grab the position and hang on to it. If Harrison is going to get on the field, Harrison will earn it as the season goes on. But I think it should be Jones's position to lose. And Grant, you know, they certainly have a backup waiting if Jones can't make that happen. I think that's the real approach here. It's not saying that they have 100% faith in Jones. It's more, let's see what he can do if he's given that full-time job. And if he doesn't get it done, they'll go back to rotating him.
Yeah, you know what? I think the rotation isn't necessarily a bad thing. I wrote that article over on Behind the Steel Curtain about Lamar Woodley and how he had said on Sirius XM NFL radio that his sack numbers weren't up because they were only using him on rushing downs. And, you know, that's where some of Jarvis Jones's strengths are, is being a run stopper. So the other side of this is, if you use Jarvis Jones only on rushing downs, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean he can't get to the quarterback or he can't improve here in the near future. It's not saying that he's a failure. On the other hand, as you guys had said, James Harrison is, let's face it, you know, this is probably his last year in the NFL, and you got to kind of, you got to save this guy. You got to try and, as much as he probably wants to be out there on the field, physically Father Time catches up with you, whether he can play every single down, that's very debatable. I think the rotation's probably better. And of course, we're talking here Jarvis Jones and James Harrison. But on the other side of things too, you still have a young Bud Dupree and you have Arthur Motes. So very interesting side note here is that I read somewhere that the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff had requested that all of their linebackers weigh in at 250 or less. So what was it, like Bud Dupree's down however many pounds, and Jarvis Jones actually in shape too, from what I read. Is that correct, guys?
Yeah, from what I've seen, the weigh-ins went very well as far as the outside linebackers cutting weight. And I personally think it's amazing to learn that Dupree dropped 20 pounds in one offseason. I mean, you know, even as young as he is, to do that and still be, you know, as physically fit as it seems like he is, and he's certainly drawing rave reviews at camp so far, I'm really impressed by that. I think we're about to see, you know, the full extent of Dupree's athleticism, which really is a guy that should be in Rio right now as opposed to training camp. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, an amazing physical specimen. His issue has really been, you know, he doesn't really know how to play the game all that well. But you're talking a guy that really was a physical freak. You know, athletically, I think he had an advantage over most guys he went up against last year at 275 pounds. If he's doing it at 255 now, you're talking some major speed off the edge to the point where it's like, all right, well, we'll work on the hand fighting. We'll work on the technique stuff. Just go get the quarterback. There really shouldn't be anybody that could stop him. You know, with a standing head start off the line of scrimmage, if he's at 255 and he's, you know, insanely fast at 275, you're talking about a significant amount of speed, and with that, an advantage off the edge for them. And if the other outside linebackers are able to play much faster than they have been in the past because they cut weight, you know, definitely it's going to work. You lose a bit of that brawn, but this is a speed game. We're having to see outside linebackers in particular get more and more athletic every single year. I think the Steelers drafted Dupree because he was that freak athlete, and having him cut weight the way that he has is going to make him even faster, and that's going to make him a more productive player.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything that you said there, and even adding my own personal experience, mind you, not anything as far as a professional or collegiate athlete, but just as an official and officiating and having to take fitness tests, when I am weighing in at even 5 pounds less, my times are improving, and I'm obviously faster. And even at an older age, I'm not able to maybe increase that capacity, or, you know, get a cardio level any higher than what my best was. I'm getting older. I don't recover as fast. But we're talking about a gentleman in his early 20s who just dropped 20 pounds. That is going to be just ridiculous when we see him out there on the field. So speaking of young gentlemen, Wanted to ask you guys what you thought, and I'm going to lead off with this one. It appears the Steelers went into the draft to repair their defense, and unlike any year, this is going to be maybe an unprecedented year where a lot of rookies see a significant amount of playing time. So I wanted to ask, of the first three-round draft picks, of course, since the fourth-round pick was an offensive lineman, we have Artie Burns at cornerback, Sean Davis at safety, and Javon Hargrave as a defensive tackle. Who do we think gets on the field first? Who gets on the field the most? And who's starting by the end of the season? And I think I'm personally going to pick Javon Hargrave. I think I still just have like a whole man crush on the small college underdog deal. But I really, really just – I can't get the picture out of my head from the San Diego game last year where Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt looked like they were about to shrivel like grapes. They were sweating so much it looked like they had nothing else left to give. And I think those guys need to – we're just speaking about a linebacker rotation. I do think that they need to come off the field here or there. The Steelers are on record. Coach Mitchell's on record is saying – that Hargrave is a three-down player, and he can play anywhere along the line. So he may not be just a traditional nose tackle. He would be competing with time with maybe Dan McCullers, but Dan McCullers is still an unproven talent as well. So I think his path, as opposed to maybe Burns or Davis, may be more clear towards a starting role. What do you guys think?
I mean, from my standpoint, I'd agree with you. I would say Hargrave now. I think the second on that list would probably be Sean Davis. And we kind of have a little cheat sheet based on training camp so far and what we've seen. Hargrave has produced some really rave reviews from those that are there watching live. His hands, his initial step is really, really good. And you haven't heard much from Dan McCullers. So I think that the Steelers are going to probably deploy Hargrave early and often if he keeps up his current pace. But when we saw Senquez Golson go down with a foot injury yesterday at training camp, I was fully expecting to see Artie Burns, even Doran Grant step in. They put Sean Davis in the slot, and that's kind of reminiscent of what they did last year when they put Robert Golden on the field, had three safeties on the field at once. I think if you're going to order them, I would definitely say Hargrave first. I think Davis second, and then I would go with Artie Burns last. Or Burns, they're just saying, is very raw. They even have him returning some kicks at times. I don't know if he sees the field much at all this year.
You know, the interesting thing, it really comes down to positional need. And I think with that, not factoring in Golson's injury, I mean, you have to kind of consider Golson to be a rookie just like Burns is as well. I mean, he hasn't been on the field. He hasn't really played. So all three of those positions have something of a need, especially within sub-packages. So I think all of them have an opportunity to compete, but it's really going to come down to situations. I mean, we saw it last year. You brought up the San Diego game before. Personally, I wouldn't have wanted to take Hayward or Tuitt off the field during that game. They absolutely slaughtered that offensive line. Tired as they might be, they're primary weapons within that defense. It's tough to take them off the field. Does Hargrave get a couple snaps because of that, just for the sake of maybe resting him on early downs? If he can earn that, yeah, I'm sure they would like to do that. I can see more of a favorable advantage for Davis because of that, more so than Hargrave, just because, as Jeff mentioned, the three safety look, which incidentally was something the Steelers wanted to do with Golden when he was an undrafted rookie back in 2011 or 2012, whichever year that was. Going with that big nickel look, getting a third safety on the field, I think that speaks more to situations, games in which Davis would get on the field more than any of them will. But come the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised to see all of their snap counts be roughly similar. I don't think any one of them is going to play, barring injury, of course. I don't think any one of them will play significantly more than the others. And I think all of them will have something of a role on special teams. But for me, I think it's going to be Davis, just because they're always looking to be as versatile as they can be in that secondary. They want to use five defensive backs in the best ways that they can. The injury to Golson could open a door for Burns to get on the field a bit more than perhaps they had wanted to his rookie year. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think they're going to throw Burns out there you know, on an island if he's not ready to handle it. So they, you know, they could still sign a veteran cornerback during camp. They traded for one last year, so who's to say that they wouldn't, you know, explore that option if Golson's injury is significant. So it, for me, I think Davis has the best opportunity right now just due to matchups. You know, Golden filled that third safety role last year. They don't have that outside of Davis this year, and I think that's something they'll want to employ on a game-by-game basis. So there could be a couple games that he plays 30-plus snaps.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, Neil, the 30th-ranked pass defense last year, there's no one there that I feel is their job maybe safe. You know, obviously Mike Mitchell and William Gay aren't going anywhere, but the rest of those guys, like Ross Cockrell and even Robert Golden, none of those guys are maybe entrenched as a starter. They do have experience, and they are veterans, so that may give them the nod. But as we've seen in the past with players, let's say Ziggy Hood, for example, and Cam Hayward was lying in wait, if a player underperforms, I think we've seen the Steelers pull the trigger a little bit faster in getting some of the younger guys on the field just earlier now, as opposed to before, where they had a lot of patience with a particular player. Something's not working. As you said, I'm a big fan of Sean Davis, and I think he has just as clear of a path now. Of course, injuries are going to change a lot of things. Setting injuries aside, I wouldn't say necessarily that Ross Cockrell is always going to beat out Artie Burns. He didn't necessarily beat out Antoine Blake last year, and Antoine Blake was just not a quality player in a lot of instances. And, of course, mentioning Dan McCullers before with Javon Hargrave, this is going to be interesting. I do think all three of these young men see a lot of playing time this year. And just to comment on the San Diego Chargers bit there, is the San Diego Chargers. Their offensive line was miserable last year, so I couldn't imagine, maybe just hypothetically speaking here, if Hargrave is capable and he were able to get on the field there, give those guys a blow, that may have even been more beneficial for the Steelers. You know, it's one of those glass half empty, glass half full things. So speaking of the new players on this team, who does Ladarius Green replace in the Steelers' offense? Is he a replacement for the retired Heath Miller? Or is he one of these kind of hybrid tight ends that we're going to see out in the slot, and perhaps he sees the targets and production that Martavis Bryant had?
I think he's got to get on the field first. Here's the thing with Green. I think the four-year contract that they gave him at a pretty reasonable price, I think they're paying him up front to learn a bit more. I see a very raw player, an incredible athlete, definitely a big asset, but kind of a one-dimensional player. He's not a great inline blocker. Because of that, you're kind of limiting your offense if he's the only tight end in there. You kind of have an idea of what he's going to do when he's on the field. And I think the Steelers want to promote, you know, a sense of balance with their base package on offense. You're going to have a tight end in there, but they want to be able to show that they're capable of running the ball and they're willing to run the ball. I don't think it's something they're going to want to do with Green the same way that they did with Miller. I mean, Miller, you know, a quality all around tight end. He could do a lot of different things. And that gave the Steelers the ability in pre-snap to show defenses everything that they have on the field. And they have to account for a lot of different things that somebody like Miller is doing. I think they have a pretty good sense of what's going to happen if Green is on the field in that similar type of role. So injury aside, I think really what they wanted from Green was to learn, you know, and develop into a better all-around player than I think he has been in San Diego. So with that in mind, I think he is going to be more of a receiver. There are more things that they can do with him down the field than they could with Miller last year. And I think a player like that, a guy who's capable of having like a 15-yard per catch average, is more Bryant than he is Miller. But the key is, what are you going to do with that other tight end position? So then you're dipping into, you know, 12 personnel packages. If you get Jesse James on the field as well, maybe he's a little bit further along as a blocker than Green is. I don't know if that's true or not, but you have two athletic weapons at your tight end position. You got to worry about blocking as well. It seems to me more like they're trying to employ more wide receivers than they are, you know, your standard inline blocking tight end. So I, for me, I think it's his highest and best right now assuming he gets on the field, is going to be as a receiver, you know, deep down the seam, as opposed to the shorter stuff and staying home to block like Miller was.
Well, I think what you're seeing also is kind of the evolution of the Steelers' offense. How many times have we as fans witnessed the Steelers get abused by athletic tight ends and say to ourselves, why don't we have that on offense? I don't know if you've got you guys, but I've asked that over and over again. And every time the draft rolls around, you know, you hear Colbert get on the mic and say, well, there's two positions that we're not interested in, tight end and quarterback, because they had Heath Miller and Ben Roethlisberger, obviously. But I think that, like Neil alluded to, it's going to bring a whole new wrinkle, a whole new dynamic to this already lethal Steelers offense. But he has to get on the field. He has to prove he's healthy. And the biggest thing, in my opinion, he has to prove that he has a rapport with Ben Roethlisberger. If you've watched Roethlisberger throughout his career, like all three of us have, he has to trust the receiver before he's going to go to them with regularity. That's why he goes to Antonio Brown so much, because he knows where he's going to be. The timing is perfect. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to say, I guess, like Neil said, it's going to be more as a receiver than it is anything else. But I think it's just going to, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not going to be Heath Miller out there. I think fans hope they don't expect that. He's just a different player. He's a different breed of athlete, and that's a good thing for the Steelers offense.
I would even add to this, Jeff, if you look at Miller's salary cap position heading into this year, I wouldn't be surprised if it really was, you know, in Miller's exit interview, we're strongly weighing releasing you just with the amount of money that they were going to owe him for what I felt was a declining level of play for Miller. I think they were planning on going this direction before he retired. I think a lot of people are suggesting that, you know, it came as this big surprise. They plan these things out. There's no way that they didn't consider the possibility of you know, 33-year-old Heath Miller, you know, kind of walking off into the sunset after last season. I don't think Miller was, you know, while he was solid, I don't think he was nearly the player that they need him to be for a $7 million salary. Not when Jesse James, who grossly exceeded my expectations for him in his first year, he played pretty well. I think they knew that they had something of an option. I think that they knew the tight end position really fit with a plan as far as free agency was concerned. They knew there were guys out there that they could sign for a pretty affordable deal to move that position into, you know, kind of the next step of it. So you put all that together, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of told him we're you know, looking to you know, maybe move on at the position this, you know, during this offseason. So just to let you know, and Miller made the choice on his own to retire, and certainly he had a great career, but the business moves on. I don't think that Miller would have been even half the player this year as he was last year. So, you know, to Jeff's point, I definitely think the offense was looking to evolve, to find somebody that, you know, if he's got a real high end, you know, receiving ability the way that Green does, that's going to better serve the offense overall than having a good all around tight end. They can teach him how to do the rest of what he would need to do as that number one tight end. So I think overall, you know, they put the plan in motion, and that's what they were looking to do from the start.
Yeah, and one thought on that too, I had written an article speculating kind of the same. If Heath Miller had been maybe forced out or asked to retire, maybe it wasn't as public of a deal as with Troy Polamalu, where that was a really, really, really kind of sketchy situation. And I think Heath, you know, both of those guys are, what do you want to say? It's almost like anyone within the Steelers organization really respects the front office and the ownership. You even hear it with Antonio Brown now with all of this contract hoopla and saying how he has too much respect for him to hold out. But I had asked the same questions. This was probably back when Miller retired. When was it? Back in March, in an article on SteelCityUnderground.com, if anyone wants to go back and look at that. But speaking of all the tight ends, of course, Jesse James is, in Ladarius Green's absence, is running with the first team for the most part here at training camp. And it also means another young man on this roster is seeing quite a bit of action since Green is on the shelf right now. His name is Xavier Grimble, and there's a lot of camp buzz surrounding Xavier. He's bounced around. This is, I think, his fifth team in the NFL in 3 or 4 years. What do you guys think about Xavier Grimble? Does he actually have a shot based on all the things we just said about Green and everything we said about the tight end position? Some people might be a little worried about maybe after Heath's retirement and, of course, Matt Spaeth being released. Is this a problem area for the Steelers? And does Xavier Grimble have a shot at making the 2016 roster?
I think what's interesting about the Steelers' tight end position in this, new brave non-Heath Miller world that they're in, they can do a lot of different things with that third tight end position if they are going to have three of them. What you're starting to see more and more each year under Todd Haley isn't so much three tight ends, but five combined tight ends slash fullback slash H-back kinds of players. Grimble looks to be the kind of type that can do that motion tight end that it really has been a staple of Haley's offenses in the past when he's had those players available. You guys might remember David Johnson, who's back on the roster now, but before he got hurt back in, I think it was 2013, that was really the role they were looking for. Will Johnson's career got started when David Johnson got hurt against the Colts in the preseason that year. Johnson was playing fullback. He was playing on the move. And now with Will Johnson moving on to the Giants, you're seeing Roosevelt Nix filling that role. It's the same kind of thing. And I think that position is something that the real late, fringe roster guys like Grimble are going to have to come in and own. Basically, you're going to be attending, the running backs meetings as well as the tight ends meetings to get a good idea of what your role is going to be. And those kinds of things give Haley and Ben Roethlisberger a lot more versatility in the short, flat area of the field as far as what they're seeing in a pre-read or a pre-snap look. So if Grimble can come in and show that he can block, he can catch out of the backfield, he's somebody that can do a lot of different things that puts stress on the front seven of a defense and requires them to make sure, a little flare pass is being covered. If he can come in and do that, I think that's really what that, kind of quasi tight end, third tight end role is going to be. Is in the past, as we've seen plenty of times, they'll put an athletic backup tackle in the third tight end spot for those jumbo goal line packages. And we've seen Calvin Beecham do that. We've seen Mike Adams do that. Maybe that's something for Gerald Hawkins to develop into as he progresses with his NFL career. But you put all that together, it's really a matter of, specialized use. And I think Grimble is a guy that can fill that type of a role within this team. And certainly he's getting a lot of accolades in camp so far. And it looks to be, oddly enough, a very interesting position. A guy like Roosevelt Nix is far from a traditional fullback H-back. He was a college defensive lineman. He's a primary special teams guy, but it looks like he's making a few things happen. I think Grimble can kind of, be formed in that same mold.
No, I mean, I think that Roosevelt Nix is who's surprising me here in this whole equation. When people ask, what do you think about the tight end situation? You obviously say Green and you say Jesse James or Locks, but then now you're seeing that Roosevelt Nix is taking more and more snaps at like the tight end position. They're looking to utilize him and his athleticism more. Grimble is certainly intriguing, and he's been a player that a lot of people have watched in camp. And I know, Neil, this is definitely an Isaac Redman Award finalist. For those that don't know, it's the camp darling, we'll say, for the fan base, and everyone roots for him. And then really it turns out they don't do a whole lot in the regular season, but still it's going to be an interesting position to watch. I think it's going to be more versatile than people think than they've ever seen under Haley or even in the last decade probably. But Grimble is someone to watch. Roosevelt Nix, he's going to throw a wrench into things. That's just my thing. I think it's going to be ultimately between Johnson and Grimble is who gets that last tight end position. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree with you too there, Jeff. I've said that many times here on the show and in the various articles I write, as have you guys. That appears to be the camp battle because the Steelers have a lot of other positions where they're very deep, including maybe linebacker. There may be some tough decisions there, as well as the wide receiver group, which the reason we're really talking about gentlemen such as DeMarcus Ayers and the undrafted Eli Rogers is – it's always been a thing each and every year where we're talking about whether or not Antonio Brown should continue returning punts. So just my initial thought on that is I always go back and think about Tim Brown, for example, who was just enshrined in a Hall of Fame almost 1 year ago. Exactly. He did it his entire career. And I think a lot of people are just really scared, and I think some of this fear comes from like Le'Veon Bell getting hurt and some of the other injuries like Pouncey and that, where this team is kind of cursed when it comes to injuries. Big Ben going down. I think they just fear, like we saw what happened with Antonio Brown. He got rocked by Vontaze Burfict and wasn't able to play against Denver. I think all of us, I don't think there's a Steelers fan or analyst or writer or blogger or podcaster you could talk to anywhere that would tell you that that game wouldn't be different had Antonio Brown played in it. But personally, I'm of the opinion that I don't have a problem with Antonio Brown returning punts. The punt return game isn't exactly the same as kick return game, and you saw back when Antonio Brown signed his original contract back in 2012 that he was removed from kick return duties, because before that he was Mr. All-Purpose Yards, again creating records that didn't even exist in the NFL. Gentlemen, what are your feelings about Antonio Brown? Yay or nay on returning punts?
Nay, I'll say nay. I'll jump in here and say nay. I don't think there's a reason to risk the best wide receiver in the NFL at possible injury. And if you watched him in 2015, I know he had that big return against Indianapolis, where most people remember the celebration more than the return itself. But I just don't feel he didn't seem like he was into it last year. There were a lot more fair catches when he normally would have returned the ball. I would say that there's a year that they're going to be able to do this and get away with him not returning kicks. It's going to be this year with Eli Rogers or DeMarcus Ayers.
For me, it's as simple as Antonio Brown is probably among, if not the best punt returner in the game. I don't know why you want to take that off the field. Ben Roethlisberger was injured multiple times last season by playing football. Antonio Brown was injured by Vontaze Burfict by playing football. That's going to happen. You know, he has just as much chance, theoretically, as getting hurt on a punt return, which, frankly, he doesn't even do the majority of the time. Maybe one out of three he actually returns, than he would, you know, catching a pass. And he gets 190 targets a season. That's a pretty big workload. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, granted, you know, the Colts have not even shown anything of a challenge against the Steelers the last couple of years. But those are big plays. He's on the field to make plays. In my mind, it doesn't make much of a difference in, you know, the method in which he's receiving the ball. The fact is he's the most dangerous open field runner in the NFL, and that situation, if anything, is bred for him. If Antonio Brown didn't work as hard as he did, he never really developed himself into the receiver that he has, he'd still be the best punt returner in the game, just because he's so instinctive. He's such a great and creative open field runner. He's extremely hard to take down. Injuries are part of the game. I don't want to risk Antonio Brown any more than that. But by that same logic, you may as well put him in bubble wrap. I mean, he's got to play. He's got to be on the field. And it's not as if, as Jeff alluded to, it's not as if he's returning a ton of them. In many situations, he's fair catching at his own 45-yard line. That's field position. He doesn't have to risk a return. He doesn't have to risk a turnover, which has happened to him in the past when he perhaps shouldn't have run when he did. He can do all that and not take contact. So you're talking he tacks on an additional, you know, 15 tackles throughout the course of a season. Along with that, he's going to break at least one for 20 yards. He's probably going to score a touchdown at some point over the season. I want that. If it's me, I want that. And at the same time, if DeMarcus Ayers can do that, then absolutely get him out on the field. I don't think DeMarcus Ayers is going to be the same level of punt returner that Antonio Brown is, though. Just call it a hunch.
Yeah, I think my hunch leans on the Dree Archer experiment right there. And the Steelers, of course, aren't alone in having, let's say, a top-level player that contributes elsewhere on their team as a punt returner. Arizona uses Patrick Peterson. Former Steeler himself, Emmanuel Sanders, returns punts in Denver. You have Jarvis Landry, who could be the best player on the Miami Dolphins offense, at least now that they've kind of cleaned house already there. He's returning punts, too. And then, of course, Tavon Austin, Pac-Man Jones in Cincinnati, and then you have Golden Tate in Detroit. So all of these guys are major contributors to each of their teams. But, of course, you don't see the same level of impact as having a player like Antonio Brown returning punts. Danny Smith himself, there was a quote here that I pulled up, and he was talking about the whole Jacoby Jones experiment. And there was a quote here about Antonio Brown coming to him and said, "Danny, I don't like it." And he says, "My honest comment was, Antonio, I don't like it either, but that's what we're going to do." And that's what we did. It didn't work, and we went back to Antonio Brown. You can never have enough of these kinds of guys. You can never have enough of punt returners. And that's the way I feel about having like a DeMarcus Ayers or Eli Rogers making this 53-man roster. We saw what happened when Antonio Brown wasn't available last year to return punts in those games. Marcus Wheaton has come out and said during training camp that he would like to get more involved with that too. And I think he should. He should get some reps there because he did not look good as a punt returner. That actually hurt the Steelers quite a bit in that divisional playoff game as well. And then, of course, the Jacoby Jones experiment was just awful. I think everyone was somewhat excited on that, and that was kind of one of those legacy-type feelings where this guy was way past his prime at doing what he was at one time good at doing. So as we see, having solid special teams all around is very important. Kick returns less than punt returns this day and age, but you got to have somebody reliable back there. As you said, Neil, he's not going to take as much damage as he did. Antonio's also a smart player who he'll just run it out of bounds, even just to avoid some contact. He'll get those few extra yards and just scamper, just go to the left or the right with a real quick move and still not get hit going out of bounds. Even if he did, it would be a flag, so it'd be beneficial. So players aren't going after him anyways because they're head smart and they're not going to draw a penalty like that. So, guys, I had a bonus question, of course, and you already know what this is. As a spoiler, I was going to try and sneak this in here, but nothing goes past your detection. So we're talking off the air just yesterday about football movies. So I had to bring it up once again, something for fun. What is your favorite football film? You could pick more than one because I kind of lump everything into one group.
I'll go ahead and I'll say that my favorite football movie top to bottom has to be Varsity Blues. And it's amazing to me, as a school teacher, that the youth of America have not watched this movie. They don't even know what it is. You say, have you ever seen the movie Varsity Blues before? And they look at you like you've got something crawling out of your ears. I think James Vanderbeek nails it. Bud Kilmer's Coyotes. There's really, at least for gentlemen our age, which I think we're all around the same age, to me, that movie just defines growing up, playing football and stuff like that. I'll go with Varsity Blues.
It's depressing to hear that there are people that haven't heard of Varsity Blues. It's not that old, is it?
No, it isn't. They just haven't seen it. I swear, I say to kids all the time, like, hey, have you ever seen the movie Varsity Blues? Like, no. Like, Friday Night Lights, I remember the Titans because that's more of like a movie they could actually watch in school. That's like as far back as they go. I don't know.
What's interesting to me about that is that Varsity Blues is one of the few recent football movies, if there even are any, that are set in current times. I mean, you have so many that are kind of throwbacks to different eras. There are a bunch of documentaries and everything that are made on, kind of old school football, and that really kind of seems to be where the market is going. But if you look back at Friday Night Lights for what the movie was in relation to the book, obviously it's not an exact carbon copy. You don't write a book like that and expect it to be, you don't expect that to have a movie made exactly what it is. I mean, it really kind of captures more the spirit of the team, whereas the book itself went, a bit more into local politics and things of that nature. But I think Friday Night Lights was the best as far as capturing quality football, which is really, really hard to get based on what we've seen from movies in the past on the subject. It's excellent football that's being played. It's a nod back to kind of a different era to some degree as far as like the equipment and the way the game is played. You see a bit more realism in that regard. And it's a captivating story. And I think it's very well told in movie form. A lot of unknown outside of Billy Bob Thornton, but quality acting done throughout the movie. And I really enjoyed it. Varsity Blues is a great movie. It's something I'll watch every fall just as kind of a rite of passage of the seasons. But I think Friday Night Lights top to bottom is the best.
I'm very disappointed you guys did not say Draft Day.
I never saw Draft Day. I never watched it.
You know, it's not as bad as you think. I mean, you hear about Kevin Costner and the Browns, and I did watch it last year. I think it was on TV, and it's not as bad as – I mean, if it weren't the Browns, it would probably be a little bit better. But the fact that in the movie that they're portraying a team that's just god-awful, it's appropriate that it's the Browns.
Yeah.
You look at draft day top to bottom. My issue is I already know exactly what's going to happen, and I don't need to see the movie to know it. So I never bothered to do it. I'm also somebody who owns several Kevin Costner movies. For a guy that gets ripped on as much as he does, I'm willing to bet that most, 30-something American males own a lot of Kevin Costner movies. Dreams you have to have, Bull Durham you have to have. Those are movies that, Tin Cup, another great one. He's been the staple sports movie actor. As much as we hate him, he's in a lot of really good movies, and it makes you wonder how much he's really taking away from it. Probably a little, at least a little bit, but they're great movies. Like, you're not going to watch Tin Cup if it's on, just randomly, if you're flipping channels, you happen to see it. That's another movie I'll fire up at certain parts of the year, because it's a classic. It's a great movie. Bull Durham, I think, is one of the best baseball movies that we'll see, just because it really captures, kind of the life of a team as they're going through a season, as crazy and stupid as it is. They do a good job of all of that. And the common denominator, unfortunately, is Kevin Costner. So my thing with draft day is it really has nothing to do with Kevin Costner. It's just the fact that, one, I didn't have the opportunity to watch it. At least it never came to my conscious mind to go watch it at any point. And that's mostly because I already know exactly what's going to happen. I don't need to read the script or see the movie to know exactly how it's going to end. I'll watch it eventually. How's that? I'll get there. It's only, what, 3 years old now?
I have no idea.
I could probably find out for you. I was going to pull it up, actually, because I was thinking 2014. I have it here.
Okay,
Almost now 20 years old is Jerry Maguire, but that's not going to show me the money is not actually my pick, guys. I got to go with one, and you're going to chuckle. You probably didn't think of this. Little Giants, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
If that movie's on, you're not going to – well, who says turn the dial anymore? Most of the people listening to this, if they're younger, don't even know what a dial is on a TV, but you're not going to flip the channel. I absolutely love that movie. I love Ed O'Neill. I always liked Married with Children, and he's just it's the essence of everything. You have the team that's, all the money's pumped into them. You got all the kids with the proper equipment. Then you got this ragtag group of underdogs. So for me, that's where the money is. It kind of captured that same essence of something like The Sandlot. I love that movie, but. Gentlemen, we are up against it. Thank you for joining me here on the Steel City Underground podcast. Let's start with Neil, since this is your first time on the show. Neil, go ahead and tell the listeners where they could follow you and any parting words.
Well, thanks for having me, first off. It's been a blast talking to you guys this morning. I'm at Neil Coolong on Twitter, NEALCOOLONG. I'm responsible for 12 sites within the USA Today Sports Media Group network right now. We're looking to expand even more, and I'm still contributing on Steelers Wire. So give us a look there.
Okay, Jeff, it's your turn here. Thank you for coming back on the show. Why don't you tell all the listeners out there how they can follow you and your work as well?
At BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, which is SB Nation's Pittsburgh Steelers blog. You can follow us on Twitter at BT Steel Curtain, as well as on Facebook, facebook.com/BehindTheSteelCurtain.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, I am your host, Joe Kuzma. Once again, a big thank you to Jeff Hartman from Behind the Steel Curtain and Neil Coolong from Steelers Wire. And you guys already know how to follow me everywhere. I am Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. But until next time, be safe, be good, and I will catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.